Good morning, Tony.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thank you. I've been enjoying some clear skies, so I hope some of your listeners have been enjoying them as well.
Yeah, there have been, haven't there? I mean, remarkably clear skies. The only trouble is we let the dog out at night and go and stand out there for a while, but it's so cold.
Mm.
And you think, I can't stand out in this, but it's beautiful that you can see so many stars, even in areas where the light pollution is sort of, well, there. You can still see a lot in the sky.
Yes, you certainly can. You can see the planets at the moment. It's causing a stir.
It is, isn't it? It's all over at the moment. They're talking about the alignment of the stars. Can you just or the planets, should I say, the alignment of the planets. Can you just explain that a little more?
Yes, certainly. So normally when you step outside at night, you can see one or two planets, sometimes more than that. But it's an unusual time because with the naked eye, you're able to see, and we're going to be able to see, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter and Saturn. And you can see them all at the moment. And you can't miss them. You absolutely cannot miss them. So when you step outside on a clear night, and I'm sure there's going to be a few more still, I think actually the forecast is quite good.
Yeah.
So when you step outside, first of all, look due east. So in the direction that the sun rises, and as you just scan your eyes up the sky, you'll come to an orangey red coloured point of light, and it's clearly bright, clearly reddy orange, and that's the planet Mars, and it's looking magnificent at the moment. So then you need to scan your eyes over to the right, and your eye will be drawn to the next bright white light, and that is the planet Jupiter. If you have a pair of binoculars, put them on Jupiter and you can see between one and four of the Galilean moons. So these are the four of the largest of the over 90 moons that Jupiter has. These are the four largest ones. And even in a pair of binoculars, you can see between one and four points of light as they orbit around the planet, either in front of it or behind it. And that's really quite something to see. And especially at the moment when we've had some stunningly clear nights. I mean, they've been absolutely incredible, haven't they?
Hmm.
Stunning.
Yeah.
So then you keep going. So that's Mars.
Is this all
that's
in a line, effectively, going
yes,
out?
It's going out
towards the east, won't it?
That's right. And it's not a straight line, of course. It's an arc. It's got like a slight curve to it.
Yeah.
And it's in what we call the ecliptic. So all the planets, as I'm sure your listeners know, they all orbit our star, our sun.
Mm.
So they're all in slightly elliptical orbits going around our sun. And so as we stand on Earth and look at the night sky, effectively, that arc represents the ecliptic, that plane that all the planets are orbiting the sun, and they're at varying distances from us. So they look like they're in a line, but of course, there's hundreds of millions to billions of kilometres between them, but they do clearly follow an arc. So you'll get the idea of what the arc is when you go from Mars to Jupiter. You'll see that it sort of arcs over to Jupiter. Then keep your eye going, and then you'll come over to a stunningly bright white light, although it's getting lower and lower in the sky now. That is the unmissable Venus. I mean, it's shining at magnitude 4.6. That's about the brightest it's going to be all year. Totally unmissable. That's Venus. Nearby to Venus, you'll see a sort of yellow butterscotch coloured point of light, and that's the planet Saturn, the ringed planet Saturn, so you can see that as well. So you'll be able to see those four with the naked eye. Then they're going to be joined by Mercury, low down, but you can still see it. And at the end of this month, and this is something that won't happen again for another 400 years, but you will need a telescope to see these. You're going to see Uranus and Neptune as well in the south and the southwest. So that's seven planets all visible at the same time. Wow.
Now, are they all in order of distance away from the Earth? Or are they just quite random?
Yes. Yeah, they appear to be random. But of course, they are in the order of distance away from the Earth. So you've got Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune. That's the order.
Well, here's an amazing statistic. I've just been looking up while you've been talking there that says how often do all nine planets align? I'm not quite sure how they get that one, but it says so on average, the three inner planets line up every 39.6 years. The chance that Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus and Neptune will all be within this arc as well as on any given pass is 100 or 1 in 100 raised to the fifth power. So on average, the eight planets line up every 396 billion years.
There you go.
I just thought it was an interesting fact that you're not likely to see it in your lifetime again.
No, but we can certainly see these seven.
Yeah.
So that's amazing. Now, you will have to, you know, scrutinise because, of course, we're coming into the lighter skies now. Venus and Saturn will be setting quite soon after the sun. So we sort of lose them in that dusk light. Mm. But you can find them. And Uranus and Neptune are visible with a telescope. A small telescope will cover that.
So, yeah, I mean, that in itself should be a fascination for most people for quite some time to actually look up and witness something that doesn't happen that often, does it?
No, that's right, it doesn't. And, you know, obviously winter is the best time of year for looking at the night sky in terms of the planets and the stars. It's the time to go. And, of course, we're starting to head into spring, so the night skies are going to get a little bit lighter. The nights will get shorter, which on the one hand is lovely and it gets a bit warmer too. But
yes.
It also means that we start losing that really good seeing, those lovely frosty mornings. Beautiful. Absolutely stunning.
I'd say it's noticeable.
Did you happen to see the crescent moon and Venus just the other night?
I saw the crescent moon, was it last night? I think it was. There was a bright light beside it.
That's Venus.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It was literally a slither. It's like what I would call, you know, because I'm not overly sort of au fait with all of the correct terms, but it looked like a banana moon to me. It was the shape of a banana with a white dot beside it. And, yeah, unmistakable.
Yes, that's what we call the first crescent moon. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so we shall watch that one. And how long does that go on for, this sight of the planets?
This month. And as I say, by the end of the month, even though seven planets will be visible, you're going to need to do a little bit of looking for Uranus and Neptune. And of course, because it's getting lighter now, it'll get harder. So really only this month, Tony. From March onwards, we're going to start losing those planets to the light.
Yeah, OK. Well, that's what you can see in the sky. I mean, and anything else you see at the moment is going to be a bit of a bonus. I know the space station goes over from time to time, and there are times that you can find out when that's going over. And it's always a sight to see this white dot moving across the sky. And it's strange thing with it is it's the illusion of space, I think, really, because you see the space station going over and it looks just like a tiny star going over. Mm. But of course, it's much, much closer to Earth than the stars that are surrounding it.
Oh, my goodness, it's on the cosmic doorstep.
Exactly the point. You know, it's, what, 280 miles up, I think, isn't it?
That's something like that.
And then the stars are how many billions of miles away?
Millions. We're getting to the millions.
Yeah, well, if you knew the size of the space station, you get it would give you an idea of just how big those stars really are then.
Indeed.
Okay, moving on swiftly. I think you mentioned... before we actually went on air, something about the end of the solar system, which in my head sort of spells danger, really.
Well, it does. But I was actually asked to write a big feature about what's going to happen to the solar system, as far as we know. And that's going to appear in the March issue of the BBC Sky at Night publication. And so I was tasked with writing about what's going to happen, and is it like a doomsday scenario? You know, that is the solar system just going to end kaput and that's it? And of course, we're talking about things that are going to happen over a very, very long period of time. But actually, some of these changes, I mean, it's changing all the time. It's evolving, of course, as everything is. Everything has a life cycle. Things are born, they live and they die. But we can see the changes in our time. I mean, the first thing perhaps to note is when you're looking at Jupiter, and for those of your listeners with telescopes, you know, you'll know full well, you know, when you're looking at Jupiter, you can see changes on the face of Jupiter all the time. But in particular, particular, it has an enormous cyclonic storm. It's about the size of Earth. It used to be three times the size of our planet, but it's now about the size of our planet. And that's an enormous rotating cyclonic storm with wind speeds between 300 to 500 miles an hour. And it's been changing colour. But also, scientists believe that it could disappear completely. So worn away by the surrounding winds and the activity, its engagement with the sun. So even in our lifetime, it is suggested that perhaps in 10 to 20 years time, it might disappear completely. So that's something that's going to change in our solar system.
That's beyond imagination, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's pretty incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm instead of being what we call the great... That. And somehow it's not computing quite, but I get what you're saying there. I mean, this is, well, truly out of this world stuff, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, it's changing all the time. It's sort of often it's described as being sort of it sort of jiggles like a bowl of gelatin because it's caught like a spinning wheel between vortexes that are rotating in the opposite direction on the planet. And that's sort of course, you know, it speeds it up, it slows it down. And that causes this jiggling that we see. And that is, you know, eroding it effectively, but quite quickly as well. So that's one change that we're already seeing. Then, of course, you know, if you look at the red planet Mars, very topical because it looks so beautiful at the moment. One of its moons, Phobos, the largest of its two moons, is actually in sort of like a death spiral and it's tumbling towards the Martian surface, only at a rate of about 2 meters every 100 years, but it is tumbling in and it will eventually be destroyed because it will hit the surface of the planet. So we can see that happening and we don't know the effect that that will have when it actually hits Mars, but it will happen because it's a moon. It's subject to all the tidal forces of the main planet, as indeed our moon is. So that's something else that's going to happen. There's a lot happening, isn't there?
Scary.
If we move away, and it's still topical, of course, because your listeners can see Saturn, the ringed planet Saturn in the night sky. But, you know, the rings are slowly disappearing as well. Now, they are eroding, and that's by a process called ring rain, which is effectively where large chunks of rocks and solar radiation agitate the rings, especially the rings that are closest to the sort of surface layer of the planet. Of course, it's a gaseous planet, so it's atmosphere. But those rings that are closest to it have this corrosive process taking place whereby I think it's something like an Olympic-sized swimming pool of water ice, rains down onto this gas giant planet.
Wow. Yeah,
and that's going to keep going and keep going and keep going. So eventually, over a few millions of years, the rings may disappear completely. Now, that would be sad, wouldn't it?
Question for you in all of this, because, you know, there's the obvious discussion that goes on about the future of our own planet because of certain warming and stuff. But does any of this that you've explained there go towards the longevity of this planet?
Well, sticking with the subject, Tony, of really, you know, what could happen, the ultimate demise of our solar system, if we come close to home, there's our moon, of course. Now, it was created by a collision something like 4.5 billion years ago. And at that time, it was 10 times closer. So a day then lasted about 4 hours. And it's been drifting away from us at a rate of about 8 inches, which is something like 20 centimetres per year. It's still doing that. We know that.
That's
because
no small amount, is it?
No, it's not. And it mounts up. And of course, the moon is vital. It stabilises our planet. It has that gravitational pull on the oceans, so it affects the tides. So the further and further away it goes, the more we'll experience the change. It could even affect the axis of our planet as well. We don't know quite how that's going to affect us, but you can bet that there'll be, you know, disruptions in our climate, disruptions in the planet.
We're already getting currents, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. Yes, and that's right. So that's happening too.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing with all of this that is completely apparent to me is that no matter what we try and do, we're not going to stop this, are we?
No.
That's that.
In a word, no. Yeah. I know it's a sobering thought, isn't it, Tony? Because obviously, you know, you hear you hear people talking about, you know, humanity, us, I, me, mine, the effect that we are having on the planet. And most definitely we are a pretty detrimental effect as well, as we all know.
Yeah.
And how important we are.
But it's overridden by this stuff, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
And that's so the point, you know.
Yes, we think very sort of self-centric, don't we? It's all about us. But actually, I often say to people, you know, you think so small. When you think on the big picture, and as you know yourself, Tony, that truly immense, enormous picture that is almost inconceivable to our minds, then our planet is just a speck. In fact, our sun is less than that. It's lost amidst those 400 billion other suns in just our galaxy alone. We are so indescribably tiny. And for example, if there was an enormous supervolcano that kicked off, that could spell the end of our planet. And as we know, as we've discussed many times, haven't we, Tony, there's so much debris around, floating around in the solar system, hitting our Earth.
That's only going to get worse as well, isn't it?
Yes, yes. So there's artificial and non-artificial. So the artificial are the things that we put up there, but the non-artificial things that are floating around out there, enormous chunks of rock. If something, you know, a large something, a rock, say, a mile wide, slammed into our planet, it would spell the end of life as we know it, and something 7 miles wide, for example, would totally obliterate the planet.
Wow.
And they're out there. We're looking for them, but you know, they're out there.
Well, that kind of puts a whole different perspective on the whole thing, doesn't it, really?
It does.
That someone needs to explain that, and I think you need to get out there and do that, but which I'm sure you're going to do in some ways anyway. But that was the end of the solar system. We're still here, and I'm guessing that putting it into the context of size and time is, quite a few million, billion years away.
Yes, we are talking, for the moon, for example, you know, we're talking a billion years. The demise of the sun itself. I mean, our sun is dying.
That's about 4 billion years, isn't it?
That's about 4 to 5 billion years from now as well. So a long, long way off.
Yeah, okay. So no
need
to worry.
You can sleep well in your bed tonight.
Yes, no need to quite worry so much. So the other thing that is going on, because man is exploring or has been exploring space, and we've been to the moon, and I know there are sort of plans and certain people want to get to Mars. It is a thing. The Americans are actually ending their space missions, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that I'm not so
or is
sure.
It just
Tony,
the one?
I'm not sure they're actually ending, if not delaying. I sort of read something the other day that they're putting things on hold. The Artemis mission, I think, it's being knocked back by another year. But there's going to be a lot of changes, isn't there? There's a new NASA administrator who's been put into the position very, very quickly, and I know that their mission is to get to Mars. That's the high profile meeting mission that they want to do.
Mm.
They're doing it. I mean, it's going to happen.
Ah, 3-year journey there, and then what do you do when you get there?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, because I watched recently something on Netflix. I forget what it was called. I think it was called Away, AWAY.
Mm.
And it was about a group of astronauts that were on a mission to Mars, the first astronauts to go there. Oh, my goodness, the things that they had to endure. It was quite terrifying, as well as, of course, the mental issues of being so far away from Earth, out of communication, in a tiny thing that sort of, you know, subject to all kinds of things going wrong. It was pretty terrifying.
I would think it would be, and that, I think, would be a discussion for another day. I would think when perhaps we're a little nearer the time of actually this happening, but I'm not sure that it's going to happen in the next few years, is it?
Not in the next 5 years, no, but I don't think it's going to be too far off, Tony. I really don't.
Well, we'll watch this space, we will.
Jane, excuse the pun.
You're going to be busy over the next few weeks and months, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm appearing at the Sheffield Park and Gardens on the Saturday, 15th of February in the evening.
Yeah.
Check out their website. They do sell out really quickly, so it might be sold out. I'm not sure, but I'm appearing there as part of a stargazing evening. But for anyone who can't make that, I've also been invited to be part of a winter lecture series at Hurstmonceux Castle itself, in the actual ballroom. And that's on Wednesday, the 12th of March at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Really, I'm really looking forward to that. Should be lovely.
Oh, you're going to be busy then. For now, yes. Jane, well, I think we've run out of time and we've got an awful lot there to sort of sink into our heads. So for now, we'll say that's it and we'll catch up with you in a month's time to see, well, how that alignment of the planets has been going. Jane Green, for now, thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony.